And welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And, of course, along the way, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call at any time throughout the broadcast. 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
Yeah, so no phone call today, but we have a whole, we've got a health coach here. We got
my PA, Micah Jackson, here. He's my sidekick this month.
Micah Jackson?
Micah Jackson from Tyler, Texas.
Confused with Michael Jackson.
Micah's our newest addition at Veritas, and so whenever we bring in a new PA or nurse prac, they kind of hang out with me for a month or two until they learn the ropes. So
I remember you did that with Sigil, because Sigil was new when I came.
I've done it with all of them, yeah. So it's been good. And Sigil has now moved on to Abilene, or she's in the transition. She's half the time in Lubbock, half the time in Abilene, but soon to be fully all in Abilene, so, which is great. People in Abilene need this truth in medicine also. But I thought this week we'd kind of catch our breath a little bit. We've had some big-time guests on the past couple weeks, really the past few months.
Yeah.
But Dr. Thomas Levy last week and Dr. Thomas Lewis the week before that. And I kind of wanted to synthesize a lot of that information. And before we kind of get into that, I had a couple emails this week after the show last week when Dr. Levy was talking about polio, 60 cases of polio being symptom-free at 72 hours post-treatment. So I'm going to quote from the book because the calls I got or the emails I got were about where is that published. So this is from Dr. Klinner. Again, we talked about him last week being the doctor out in North Carolina, I believe, back in the 40s and 50s, who treated many different conditions with vitamin C injections, mostly intramuscular injections, but some intravenous. But specifically, the polio study was published in the Southern Medicine and Surgery Journal, July of 1949. And again, that's Dr. Klinner. And 60 out of 60 cases symptom-free at 72 hours. This was with high-dose injections of vitamin C, which was 6,000 milligrams up to 20,000 milligrams per day. And then the other one was that herbicide pesticide poisoning. And the specifics on that, there were three boys that were sprayed by a crop duster, so equal amounts of pesticide spray. One child was given 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C with a 50cc syringe every 8 hours, discharged home on the second hospital day, symptom-free. The second child was not given vitamin C, but only received supportive care, and this child was under the care of another physician, not Dr. Klinner. He developed a chemical burn and dermatitis, and he died on the fifth day of hospitalization. So it's possible that second child had some other genetic problem where he couldn't handle pesticides as well as the first child, but I would say it's likely that the vitamin C's ability to be an antioxidant, and let's remember what Dr. Levy was talking about. Dr. Levy's theory, called the unified theory of disease, all sickness, all injury from a virus, from a bacteria, from a parasite, from a toxin like these chemical sprays, or natural toxins like biotoxins, say a rattlesnake bite, or toxins that germs produce, or the toxins in our teeth, the root canal bacteria he mentioned produce very, very significant toxins, some of the most toxic, comparable to botulism. But the way any of these germs or chemicals or toxins or poisons do their damage is by stealing electrons. Now, we're getting down to the cellular level, the way our cells work. When you remove electrons or steal electrons from these cells, then they die. They can't work. They can't make energy. They can't keep their cell membrane potential up, so the cell membrane becomes leaky. The mitochondria gets dysfunctional. And when you can't turn oxygen and glucose into ATP, that's your fuel for the cell to work, then the cell dies. If you get enough of that electron stealing going on, then enough cells die, then you have organ dysfunction or organ failure. So kidneys, liver, heart, brain, lungs, I mean, if you have organ failure, you die. So that's the unified theory of disease. No matter what your problem is, it all boils down to there's not enough electrons. They're being stolen by a toxin or a germ. And so antioxidants donate electrons back into the system. That's what vitamin C is doing. So if you can give enough of that, like 10,000 milligrams, as Dr. Klinner gave in this study, and do it consistently enough to overcome the electron stealing, you get more donation than stealing, then you can support the cells and keep the mitochondria, the cell membrane, and all the cellular functions running until the body can clear the toxin or kill the germ. So that's the whole theory. Just give enough electron donors. And vitamin C is a good electron donor. And if you can give enough of it, then in theory, you would think you could overcome any problem. And that's the whole point of the book. Primal mm-hmm. Panacea is the name of the book. Dr. Thomas Leiby basically explains all this in more depth in the book. And then he just goes and quotes all the literature. He scoured the literature. As y'all remember, he's also a JD. He's an attorney. He went to law school. And I used to work in the Baylor Law Library as an undergrad, and I watched those guys, those law students, they learned how to scour the literature. I mean, they would grab these books of all these law cases, and because that's what you have to do. You have to go through all these case histories, and you're trying to find precedents to support your case. And anyways, these guys know how to comb through documents, comb through evidence, comb through the literature. And so Dr. Leiby became well-versed at that. And that's what he did. He went and combed through the literature on vitamin C going back into the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. And even currently, as he mentioned, there's been a resurgence of vitamin C research just in the past few years. So in his book, he just summarizes many of these studies, including the pesticide study, the polio, but there are numerous. There's pertussis, there's mercury poisoning, mono, hypertension, lead poisoning, hepatitis, dysentery, Shigella. I mean, I'm just flipping through Alzheimer's, amphetamine poisoning, cadmium poisoning, cancer. I mean, pretty much every letter of the alphabet, there's a title for some disease or disorder. So I encourage people to get that book just to have a deeper understanding of how your body manifests these diseases, how these symptoms and diseases, I mean, what's the real root origin of those diseases?
And I think it's really interesting or fascinating to me that, you know, we talk a lot about here on the show about how food is your medicine.
Right.
And the fact that what you're eating on a daily basis can set off triggers for your immune system to go haywire, or if you're eating the right things to kind of tone it down.
We're not going to be able to get enough vitamin C from our food, right, to do all this.
No, I don't.
You're
going
to
so.
Have to supplement to get these kind of results.
Currently in West Texas and really probably all of America, yes, you're going to have to supplement. Now, I was talking with a farmer or a former farmer. Now he builds tractors, the husband of one of our other PAs. And he was talking with a farmer up in Oregon. I forget, it's just south of Portland. I forget what valley, but he said it's basically like the Garden of Eden up there. And this guy is producing chokeberries and blueberries, but his soil is so fertile because not only is it organic, I mean, you can grow hydroponically and be called organic, but if you have very nutrient-dense soil, mm-hmm. which is what this guy focuses on, building the soil up, then the berries that are produced can be not only full of nutrition, but that nutrition equates to taste. And the wolfberry or chokeberry, if you've ever tried to eat a chokeberry, they'll make you choke. but his are so good, you just eat them plain. Where normally you have to dilute it down because it's a little too bitter. And the point of that is when you manage your soil in such a way that you have a lot of nutrition in the soil, minerals is what I'm talking about, then that plant is able to put the minerals into the fruit and the vegetables, so they taste amazing. And probably his soil, if you're eating only out of his soil, you wouldn't have to supplement. I imagine you could get it all. Same with Back to Eden, up in Squim, Washington, backtoedenfilm.com. I think it's Paul Gauchy is his name. Same thing. He produces food in a manner that's unbelievable. I mean, a garlic the size of a softball, and these cucumbers that are so watery, as soon as you take a bite, it drips all over your shirt. But the flavor is so amazing because the minerals are in it, the nutrition's in it. I mean, even around here, a homegrown tomato tastes way better than...
Grocery store tastes like nothing.
Yeah, we had a catered meal this weekend at a function, and it was sliced up, store-bought tomatoes that were hard as a rock and had zero taste. I mean, who wants to eat vegetables when they don't have any taste? But when you get the nutrition in the soil and you get a vine-ripened tomato from your backyard, it has taste to it. Well, that's the minerals. That's the nutrients. So when you talk about supplementation, it all boils down to the soil. If you've got good soil, good growing techniques, vine-ripened, you wouldn't have to supplement. But 99.9% of us aren't there, so yes, you'll have to supplement. There's not enough vitamin C in our food. There's not enough minerals in our food. You got to supplement. But there's a summit that's going to start in about a week online. It's called the Food Revolution Summit, and I haven't seen it, but I've looked at some of the previews. I've looked at the speakers, and I have a feeling they're going to do a really good job of explaining all this, how dementia can be prevented and cardiovascular disease can be prevented, even cancer can be prevented, all these diseases of the Western culture that we think just kind of fall out of nowhere onto us, or it's our genetics. This summit's going to explain the relationship between food and disease prevention by eating real food, number one. Wade, you were talking about some people eat food and they have all these reactions. Well, number one, most of what people are eating is not even food. Mm-hmm. It's processed food-like chemical substances. This study was from a few years ago, and it was like 60% of what Americans eat isn't even food. I think it's probably closer to 80 or 90% now. And what I mean by that is, would your great-grandparents recognize it? Can you pronounce every ingredient that's on the back of it? Are those ingredients God food, something God made? If it's more than five ingredients as a general rule of thumb, if you can't pronounce it, if your great-grandparents wouldn't have known what it was, those are all clues to it's not real food. And, of course, that's done because this food needs to be packaged to sit on a shelf because it's all about profit. And if you have to throw food away because it's spoiled on the shelf, that's throwing profit away. So if you can keep food on the shelf longer, you have more likelihood of it selling. Obviously, there you make your profit. So preservation of food is the goal, not nutrient-dense food. And the end consequence of that is we're all sick. So that food summit is going to kind of explain all that. But it's what all these guys are pointing to, whether it's Thomas Levy or Thomas Lewis we had on the week before. I mean, Tom Lewis, who's working with the guys, the ophthalmologists out of Harvard, what the ophthalmologist saw was these spots in the eye that he correlated with systemic disease, full body disease, specifically cardiovascular disease. And so he made this connection. Then he saw, man, these patients go on to get dementia. So we're seeing stuff in the eye that 10 years prior, when there are no dementia symptoms, we see these characteristics in the eye. And then 10 years later, there's dementia. So it's not just an eye disease. It's obviously a brain disease. Macular degeneration. Dr. Lewis said, oh, that's cardiovascular disease. I thought it was an eye disease. No, it's not an eye disease. I mean, it's a manifestation of inflammation. We're catching it in your eye, but it's not just happening in your eye. It's happening in your coronaries, and it's happening throughout the body. So all these diseases that we categorize as heart disease or joint disease, rheumatoid arthritis, or gut disease, ulcerative colitis, or brain disease, Alzheimer's, or whatever. The way Western medicine trains us in medical school, the way they trained me at UT Houston, they trained Micah here at Tech at the PA program, it's all the same no matter where you go here in America. These schools, the curriculum's the same. You do a six-week neurology rotation to study the, quote, brain diseases, MS, Lou Gehrig's, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. And then you do a 6 weeks orthopedic rotation. You study the bone and joint diseases. You do a endocrinology rotation to study the endocrine gland. So you like your pancreas and diabetes. OBGYN, you study the ovaries and the uterus. You study everything in this compartmentalized approach, and you spend 6 or 8 weeks doing it, and you just focus on that thing, that organ system, and you go to that specialist to talk about that organ system. Well, no one connected the dots for us that, you know, when we're sitting in the dermatology rotation studying psoriasis, the dermatologist never taught us that the gut and the immune system in the gut, which 80% of your immune system is in your gut, and the relationship between food and the immune system and stress and the gut health and the skin, it's all connected. We're not this compartmentalized, you know, dermatologists only focus on the skin. It's your skin's connected to your blood supply, which is connected to your gut and everything else. We're all one connected being. So that's number one. We get started off the wrong way in our education system, all compartmentalized. And then obviously we are trained in the pharmaceutical approach, which is treat the symptom with a pharmaceutical. So it's interesting to listen to these guys who've connected the dots of inflammation and disease, systemic disease, and how it's really all related. It's all interconnected. And there's the approach of Dr. Levy, talks about in his book, just throw a bunch of vitamin C at it. If we know that ulcerative colitis or psoriasis on the skin or rheumatoid arthritis in your joint or Alzheimer's in your brain is all inflammation from some toxin or germ, then let's give enough electron donors back in to counteract that. Free or maybe all. And again, that's the point of his book. It's all the way back to if it's all we were interviewing Morley Robbins so much. And he did sit here and say, is your body is equipped to donate electrons back to itself. And this system of antioxidant enzymes, vitamin C is an antioxidant, it's a vitamin, you consume it. But you have antioxidant enzymes that are inside your body. You don't have to consume them. God made you with them. He created you with this enzyme system. And these are powerful, powerful antioxidants. Way more powerful than vitamin C that you can get in an IV. For instance, a molecule of vitamin C can donate 2 electrons. But a molecule of glutathione, for instance, could donate 1,000 electrons because it's recyclable. So glutathione, superoxide dismutase, catalase, ferrooxidase. These are all the names of enzymes that are electron donors. They're antioxidants, and they're in your body, ready and willing and able to put out all the fires of oxidative stress and inflammation, ready to donate electrons back to you, and then recycle themselves and do it all over again. So it's amazing the way God designed us. I'm not knocking vitamin C or saying not to get some or not to eat it for sure. It's great to eat foods that have antioxidant potential. One of the highest antioxidant potential foods you can eat is clove and cinnamon. The spices in general are going to have a whole lot. Those two have probably the most. Even sorghum. Sorghum, I read just the other day, has a very high ORAC value. ORAC are the initials. And that's basically a scoring system that measures, how powerful is this antioxidant food. So you can eat all these, and that's great. I encourage you to do it. But we also need to support our own enzyme system that has the antioxidant capacity. And what Morley reminded us or showed us in the literature was that excess unbound iron, if y'all remember, iron has to be chaperoned. It has to be connected to a transport mechanism. And if iron is not bound up with its chaperone, then it's a wild child. It runs around doing damage. And one of the ways it does damage is by blocking all those antioxidant enzyme systems, the catalase, superoxide dismutase, ferrooxidase, glutathione. All of these are handcuffed by excess unbound iron. And that's why Morley focuses on iron so much. Not only does iron all by itself steal electrons and cause oxidative stress and inflammation, it is a toxin when it's unbound, but it also blocks your own ability to put out the fires and donate electrons back. So they started adding iron to our food in the 1940s based off a study of pregnant women that were a little anemic, and they assumed we were all anemic in third world countries where there was malnourishment and they were anemic, and someone decided America's just not going to be anemic, so they added iron to the food. that was short-sighted and based out of incomplete information. What they didn't realize was the body is able to recycle iron spectacularly. Probably the best, most efficient recycling system mankind has ever seen is the iron recycling system in the body. So once you have iron in you, you don't let it go. The body holds on to it. And you really only need about a milligram of iron a day dietarily, which you easily get in vegetables and red meat. So when they add it or fortify it to the grains, then we start getting 5, 10, 15, 20 milligrams of iron or more a day. Because if you think about standard American eating, you wake up and have a bowl of Cheerios, heart-healthy Cheerios, quote-unquote, and which are fortified with iron. Then you have your whole wheat bread, which is fortified with iron. And there's two servings right there. And if you got an extra big bowl of Cheerios, you got three servings. And then you have your sandwich for lunch, and you have some peanut butter crackers for a snack, and you have a little cookie, even if it's a small fat-free, gluten-free, sugar-free Oreo or something. It's still fortified with iron. And then you have spaghetti that night for supper with some bread to go with it. The point is, you just got 20 or 30 milligrams of iron in one day. That was enough for the whole month. And if you're going to recycle it so well, which we do, then you just got way too much iron in the system. And while this happens day after day after day, year after year after year, generation after generation since the 1940s, and what you have is a population that is full of iron in their tissues, in the joints, in the organs, in the eyeballs, in the brain, in all of our tissues. And when it's in the tissue and it's not bound properly, it's going to drive all this oxidative stress and block your antioxidant enzymes. So that's, I'm trying to bring all this around together to say, number one, of course, food does matter. Number two, we need to quit messing with the food. Start with get the iron out of our food. We don't need the excess iron. Number two, let's eat real food. Number three, let's grow it in ground that's nutrient dense. Let's start paying farmers for nutrient dense food. The guy up in Oregon, the point of that conversation about the Oregon farmer who's growing these berries in very, very nutrient rich soil because of his farming technique, this biodiverse farming technique, really brings diversity of life into the soil, and which means his berries are going to be nutrient dense compared to even the organic berry grown down the street. It's not grown in such nutrient-dense soil. He's looking for some way to get value. You know, what we were talking about was how to label his food. You know, food really needs to be labeled not only organic or not organic, but conventionally grown, hydroponically grown, biodiversity grown, or some type of labeling system that can tell the consumer, this came out of soil that is very, very nutrient-dense, or some way to be able to measure the nutrient density of the food. I mean, you'll be able to tell just from the taste. Compare that guy's berries to any other berry. Taste-wise, you'll know. But somehow we've got to get the food system back to that. And until that time, we supplement. If you're not even to the point of being able to change your diet and you just want to do a quick fix, you know, the vitamin C is a very quick fix for an acute problem. An acute illness, even chronic disease, if you've got a toxin or a germ, it's going to be able to help you. Long term, though, I don't think you need that. I don't think you need to supplement like that. So just kind of wanted to bring this thing full circle and let the listeners really kind of have that deeper understanding of how all these guys are talking about different things, but really it's all the same.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome into the show.
Thank you. Yeah, doctor, I understand that and what I've been listening to. But over the years, I've also listened to a side where they said, if we didn't have pesticides and fertilizers, we couldn't feed all the people that we have now. And so much of our land we have now around here in Lubbock would be under cultivation.
Right. Yeah, the interesting thing, when you talk to these guys who grow this way, the biodiverse way, they don't have pests. Even though their neighbors have pests, they don't have pests because the plant is healthy. And I talk about this in one of my food lectures where I show a slide that when they started tilling the land, when you uncover and till the land, you start to kill the diversity in the soil, meaning the bacteria in the soil. So you get less mineralization of the plant. When the plant's not mineralized, it becomes a weaker plant. When it's weaker, it's more susceptible to pests. It's also, the land's more susceptible to weeds coming in. So then they've got to artificially grow the plant with these fertilizers to make it bigger and stronger. But that demineralizes it even more because it grows so quickly, the trace minerals don't have time to come in. And then they've got to spray the weed killers and the pesticides, and that kills the bugs in the soil even more, meaning the plant gets even weaker with demineralization. So it's just this long process of a very weak plant. So what these guys show, and I'd encourage you to look at backtoedenfilm.com, I believe, I don't know how many acres his garden is, but it's not many. I mean, it may be less than an acre. And the amount of food that he produces, vegetables that he produces out of that, and fruit, he has an orchard, out of his, basically his backyard, can feed the whole neighborhood. And I think it was, you know, the Victory Gardens in the 1940s, I want to say it was, I forget what percentage, one of our guests was talking about this, but a big percentage, it seemed like it was 40 or 50 or maybe 60% of the food was coming out of these Victory Gardens. So the whole notion that we can't feed ourselves, I'm not sure that I buy that. And definitely based off these guys' testimony, that when your plant is healthy, the pests stay away. And nature will balance itself where we don't have these pests just devastating the crops. So, again, I'm not a farmer, but I've talked to enough of these guys who grow this way that they talk about that. I know we subsidize wheat, corn, soybean, those big crops, and this is a whole another debate and lecture. Those are some of the probably top three foods I ask my patients to not eat. So I have a feeling we could probably survive not eating those mass grains. When I went to Africa on a medical mission trip, my takeaway message there, because they did have sacks of grain coming in, and it was keeping those folks alive, that were starving to death. But my take-home message and what I told the group, the leadership of the group, was what y'all need to teach these folks is how to grow color. They need collard greens. They need beets. They need carrots. They need color because the nutrients are in the color, and we're feeding them this porridge every day that's keeping them alive, but they're staying sick. And then basically, if they could have slept under mosquito nets, learned to wash their hands and use the bathroom in separate places and have a clean water well and a garden and some goats, they could do it. They could survive on their own. I think the little
you're saying there's too much emphasis on wheat and corn.
Correct.
And we need to get diverse, but like the other vegetables that
correct
are so beneficial.
Correct. That's my belief and my point of view. Now, I'm not saying quit sending all the feed over to Africa today. Of course, we'd have a mass starvation on our hands. But what I'm getting at is that's kind of like so much of what we do. That's a quick fix kind of deal, but it's not the sustainable long-term answer that's the best thing for their health and for life in general. So there's good, better, and best in my world of doctrine. And, you know, good's okay. Better's obviously better, but the best, that's what we want to shoot for. And getting those folks to be self-sustainable, growing their own food, not massive cornfields, I don't think is the way to go.
But we've gotten away from the old local farms, which my grandparents were.
Right.
This local area. Now, they sold that out to a big guy. He took it all in.
Yeah.
So that's all gone.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a cotton, but, I mean, you know.
Right. Well, there's
food.
There's a gentleman we interviewed a number of months ago, and it'll be archived on our website, Joel Salastine. I'm sorry, I'm getting his last name wrong, but Polyface Farms, Joe Salatan, that's it, Polyface Farms in Virginia. Basically what Joel does, and he's written a few books about this, is he teaches young farmers how to make a living on 100 acres. 150 acres, 200 acres, where you don't have to mortgage your whole family and future to the bank. And he does high density grazing. We had Weldon Warren on about 3 or 4 weeks ago with Holy Cow Beef here locally, who talked about raising 200 cows on 320 acres, and he gained 3.45 pounds a day, was the average over 6 months. And these are 1,100 pound cows, and he did it by this high density technique where you rotate through a pasture very rapidly. So every few days, you're moving them to a new little piece and you keep it fenced off. But, anyways, that's what Joel Salatin teaches, this rotation of cows, and you bring the sheep behind them or the pigs, and then the chickens come behind them. And so you have a multiple crops, and the vegetable gardening is a whole separate thing. But there is a way to do it. It's just not being taught locally. But I'm hoping, I know there's some local interest in this, and I'm hoping we'll be able to support some folks who can take 100 acres and turn a profit, and not only a profit, but be able to sustain it where mama can stay home and raise kids if she wants to. So many families are forced to have a two-income home because just the economics of it all. So there's a whole different way to do it, and I think a more beneficial way for the land and for our health and for our families.
I like it. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank
Hope
you for the
call. More of it.
Well, me too. We'll keep encouraging everybody in it.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks
you
for the call. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come right back with more with You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, check out the website, Veritas Medical, for archived shows, veritasmedical.com.
Well, we've been talking about how oxidative stress and inflammation have this common denominator of robbing electrons from your body. And if you can donate enough electrons back into the body, it will fix itself, basically. So Dr. Levy last week talking about vitamin C being an electron donor, so just pump yourself up with enough IV, high-dose vitamin C. You could try to do it orally. You could get oral vitamin C. The problem there is you can only absorb so much through the GI tract, and then it starts to pass through you, and when it passes through you, it grabs water and brings it with it, so then you get diarrhea. But if you get a real absorbable kind, I think he talked about liposomal vitamin C absorbs even better. It's possible you can do it orally, but most of the literature talks about IV. And I don't think he mentioned a study recently came out of somewhere on the East Coast, and I want to say it's Virginia, University of Virginia, I believe. IV vitamin C high dose given to sepsis patients. These are patients in the ICU, and sepsis is overwhelming infection throughout your bloodstream to the point it causes your blood pressure to drop, because there's just so much toxicity and so much germ overgrowth. And when your blood pressure drops like that, your organs aren't perfused. So your brain, kidneys, liver, heart don't get enough blood flow, and they start to die. And so these are severely sick ICU patients. And the study showed that if they were given IV vitamin C, and it was pretty modest doses, I want to say it was 10 to 20 grams, which is modest. 50 grams, 75, 100 grams is quite common in most integrative clinics. But even at that smaller dose of 10 to 20 grams, these patients did substantially better. I mean, hands down, no questions asked, not even close, substantially better. So that I would think would spur ICU doctors on to want to be doing this with all their ICU patients across the board throughout the country. Unfortunately, it takes new things a while to catch on. I have a feeling if that was a pharmaceutical agent with that great of a result, it'd be readily available in every ICU down the corner or down the street. Anyways, that's another topic, though. Back to the point. Vitamin C, it's in our food. Eat the food that has the antioxidants. There's other antioxidants besides vitamin C, and it's all in our food, the colorful food in particular. Try to get nutrient-dense food grown from soil that's nutrient-dense. Try not to eat foods that drive inflammation. That's your enriched iron, iron-enriched, iron-fortified foods. The reason we get folks off grain, initially completely off grain, and then once their inflammation's down, they can usually handle some ancient grains, grains that have been altered, modified, fortified, genetically altered or hybridized, some of the ancient grains that were in the Bible. So, for instance, most folks can tolerate those once they're well, once their inflammation is down, they've addressed their issues. But initially, we'll take wheat, we'll pick on that. Just your regular old barbecue sandwich you get at a food truck. Melody was talking about at the break, those perfectly round buns, those white bread buns, they're shiny on top. Number one, it's enriched, so it's got the excess iron. Number two, it's modern wheat. Modern wheat has 46 chromosomes compared to ancient wheat that God made has about 14 chromosomes. So there's a lot of new genetic information and gluten, different gluten than the original wheat. And some of this different gluten the body can't handle. Third is this modified wheat has been hybridized such that it has a different starch content. The starch that's in that bun is such that it your amylase, which is the enzyme in your saliva, will start to break that down and change it into sugar. That wheat changes into sugar within 5 seconds of you chewing on that barbecue
mush
bread bun. And this is all modern wheat is like this. So it changes the sugar very, very quickly. Sugar drives inflammation. Insulin drives inflammation. Fourthly, almost all, I think it's like 80% the last time I looked, of the wheat that humans eat. So not the wheat grown around Lubbock, Texas, but the wheat grown in the Midwest. It's for human consumption. 80%+ of that is sprayed with Roundup. Glyphosate's the main ingredient in Roundup. Just prior to harvest. The reason, twofold. Number one, it dries out the plant and stresses the plant so that it'll actually put a little more seed out. I think it's 10% more yield if you hit it with Roundup right before harvest. And then number two, you're killing the crop so you can plant your crop behind it real quickly. But the point of that is the wheat is being sprayed with this right before harvest, and then it's going off to the mill and getting milled and turned into flour. So there's residue of glyphosate. Glyphosate's an antibacterial. That's its original patent. It kills the gut flora. Your gut bacteria die from glyphosate. It's a chelator. That's a second patent on it. It chelates your minerals. Chelate means to grab, claw, like a claw, grab and hold on to and don't let go of. So any mineral that is left in your food, the glyphosate's holding it where it can't be utilized by your body. So there's four things right there. All drive inflammation in the body. So if Melody were to eat that bun from the food truck, barbecue truck this weekend, there are four challenges she just gave her system. Now, if she was full of antioxidants because of a good diet coming into that weekend, if she'd eaten a ton of color from nutrient-rich soil, the food came from nutrient-rich soil, or if she had loaded up on a whole lot of vitamin C and she had a whole lot of electron donors ready and able and willing to donate, then she could handle that bun. No problem. But most Americans aren't full of antioxidant foods. They're not full of antioxidant enzymes. They're all their antioxidant enzymes are blocked by iron that we've been eating since day one. They put in our baby formula.
You know what's so interesting, though, is people think, oh, I'm going to be so deprived because I can't eat all this. But once you start eating this way, if you do go back and you eat something like I did this weekend and took a bite of it, you're like, it's disgusting. It doesn't even taste. And the barbecue sauce tasted like a glucose tolerance test that I had when I was pregnant. Yep. I mean, it's just like, it's disgusting.
People don't realize the amount of sugar and salt, table salt, not real salt, that they put in our food to addict us. I mean, even the wheat, this hybridized wheat, interacts with the morphine receptors in the brain that cause you to be physically addicted to them, but also changes the way you perceive food, the way you taste food, even your taste buds. So, yeah, all of that happens slowly and gradually over time. But if you go on a fast from this man food and only eat God food for a week or two or three, some people it takes 30 days, and a lot of people will detox. They'll feel awful. They'll have headaches, diarrhea, they'll have flu-like symptoms. They'll just feel bad coming off this chemical food. And then your taste buds change. I mean, that happened to me. I used to eat cupcakes at birthday parties like they were going out of style. I'd eat three or four of them. Now, one bite of one, it tastes disgusting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even swallow the stuff. I was the cupcake man. I'm telling you. I love box cakes, the Betty Crocker box cakes with the frosting on there.
Little Debbie's.
I can't even do it now. So you're right. Your taste buds will change and your mentality will change too.
Yeah. If you do eat that stuff, oh, you feel so bad. You're like, what have I done?
And not only that, just intellectually, you know, now that we know these diseases all have a common denominator and cellular dysfunction, inflammation is the common denominator, and the cell gets dysfunctional because it doesn't have what it needs. It doesn't have the nutrients it needs. And so when you don't eat nutrient-dense food, I mean, I'm at a point now, I look at a bite of food every day and think, is this healthy for my cell? Is this feeding my cell? Is this giving my cell fuel? It's just like when you're filling up at your car at the gas tank, at the gas station. Oh. You probably don't think about it, but what if they had three or four choices there? Are you filling it full of honey, water, gas, or diesel? And you're going to pick the one that you know your vehicle needs. Well, it's the same thing with your cells and the food that goes in your mouth. Every bite you need to be thinking, is this fuel for my that God intended for my cell?
Text.
Yeah, we have a text. It's kind of off topic, but, you know, maybe not. It says, what do you do with a C. diff infection? C. diff infection.
C. diff is a bacteria in the gut that causes diarrhea, a whole lot of diarrhea. And it tends to be, I mean, it's aggressive usually in everybody, but the ones that really can't handle it are the elderly. Like nursing home patients, for instance, will get C. diff, and, you know, 25% of those folks will die. Because a lot of the C. diff now is resistant to the antibiotics. The question is, what do you do with C. diff? You try the antibiotics initially, but if it's not working, what's been shown in the literature to work well is a fecal transplant, which sounds crazy, but it's exactly what it sounds like. You get healthy fecal material, which two-thirds of a bowel movement is bacteria. People don't realize that. So when you get a good, healthy donor, you just flooded the colon. So you do this donation through a colonscope, and you flush this fecal transplant right into the colon of the patient that's suffering from C. diff. And the 90% of those patients will cure their C. diff with one fecal transplant. I think the other 10% will cure after two or three more transplants. So, I mean, it's curative, this transplant.
Are they doing that in Lubbock? They have fecal transplants?
I really don't know. Last I checked, it's been a couple years ago, and it was having a real hard time getting established.
You get the donor bang for that.
I'm not sure.
I know a lot of times they try to get it from family members.
True, yeah. Like a spouse who's not sick or another family member, typically. So those are the options. But what that points to, when C. diff is able to take a hold. Wait, are you hoping not to get C. diff?
I know the family member, I'm not getting a donation.
Oh.
You don't want the Taco Villa?
Come on.
If it comes to that, I'm going to Dr. Edwards. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh.
But what this points to more than anything is your terrain is jacked up. If C. diff is able to take a hold, and for that matter, any germ, Shigella, Salmonella, E. coli, strep, or staph, or any germ, your terrain's not optimized.
Mm-hmm.
If your terrain is good enough, which that's what's happening with the donors have healthy terrain, healthy gut flora, they just transfer it over to the sick person, and just the huge volume of good bacteria going into the sick person is able to basically drown out the bad guy.
Would that restore help? Taking that restore?
Restore is going to help everything in the gut, but for an acute infection like that, it's not powerful enough.
Well, and a lot of times the cure for that is also the cause of it. A lot of those people that get it have, you know, got started on antibiotics. So
true. Yeah, that's what wipes the terrain out to begin with. You go to the dentist and you get 875 milligrams of penicillin twice a day for 14 days. You just totally obliterated your gut flora. You basically wipe the slate clean. It's a nuclear bomb in your gut. So now you've got open, fertile ground just sitting there waiting for any bug to just explode on you.
Isn't that exactly what you were prescribed, 175 milligram twice a day amoxicillin, right?
I was not a very good patient. I was like,
antibiotics prescribed appropriately, taken appropriately for a full-blown infection. I mean, I'm not anti, but it's just the vast majority of the time, they're not needed. It's a virus, or you could build the terrain for a day or two and see what happens. Or just like with this C. diff, I mean, 90% cure with one dose of fecal transplant. I mean, that should be the number one treatment across the board before you do anything else. But we just run to the quick fix. Let's nuclear bomb it with these big, broad-spectrum antibiotics.
No, and I did do things to prevent infection. I did the vitamin C drip. I've done ozone. I've done, you know, stuff I know to do to prevent infection, just not exactly what was prescribed.
Yeah, back to the texter, she says, well, it happened after CVYD, I want to say, it's some kind of myosin, probably clarithromycin.
Clindamycin, maybe?
Clindamycin. I don't know.
Clarithromycin.
I don't know.
There's a number of antibiotics that
it's probably a high-powered
wipe
antibiotic.
Out your gut flora.
And I took a lot of those during the fall when I was sick on and off. You remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
And my
wife
was freaking out, saying, quit doing that. And I kept saying, well, but, you know, if I have an upper respiratory infection, what do you do? You can't let that, especially with a guy like me, get out of control.
That's when we bought the nebulizer.
That's
too.
A question maybe we'll answer next week because we're almost out of time, but... What do you do for upper respiratory infections? That's a good topic.
I mean,
because there's a number of things you can do.
It'll go into pneumonia quick with me.
But the first thing you do is you start right now. Right now,
yes.
April and May, you start planning for November, December.
When it's really bad.
When you start getting your terrain right now. And so then you don't even have to worry about, quote unquote, flu season.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point.
Especially with the amount of antibiotics you took last fall, you nuclear bombed your gut flora.
I did.
Fermented food, Restore, Zach Bush's product. We had him on the show talking about that months ago. There's things that encourage good gut flora growth, which is probably the key component of your immune system. One thing I wanted to kind of just wrap up the show with, we're talking about how food can kill you or cure you. You want nutrient-dense food. You don't want man-altered, iron-fortified, you know, hybridized, all these things, chemical-laden foods. Antibiotic-laden foods, 80% antibiotics aren't prescribed by your doctor. In America, 80% of the antibiotics are in our food. So we're getting a low level of antibiotics daily in our milk and in all the dairy products.
Apparently it's
really,
in the water
and
the meat, even, right?
Yeah, and in the water. All kinds of stuff in the water. Birth control and antipsychotics and everything. But doctors who have been understanding this for a long time, that all this disease and dysfunction we see in America over the last 70 years when all these diseases really started to skyrocket, the doctors that figured out, man, food does matter, and they started encouraging nutrient-dense food in their patients, they've written books and testimonials on how patients have gone into remission from various diseases. You know, going back to the 1940s and 50s with Dr. Gerson and his nutrient-dense protocol with juicing, and he has 50 cases of advanced cancer that went into remission with just nutritional protocol. He wrote a book about it. I talk about it all the time at my lectures. But even to modern day, there's Dr. Amons that during the break, Melody was talking about, she's reading his latest book on the brain and how you can for sure prevent but even have reversal of certain brain disorders purely from the food that you avoid and the food that you purposely consume. Dr. Perlmutter, he's written a book called Grain Brain and Brain Maker, and he talks about the same thing about brain health and the connection to food. So there's Dr. Dean Ornish. He's the one that first opened a lot of people's eyes with prostate cancer being reversed through a nutrition and stress relief protocol. So he was one of the pioneers in this food revolution. Food is thy medicine. I mean, it's Hippocrates that said that 2,000 years ago, let thy food be thy medicine. But now we've got physicians finally starting to really hone in on that and publish literature, publish books on it. So it's really fascinating.
Real quick, before I let you out of here, Mimi wants to know what's good for psoriasis or skin problems, maybe what you want to do.
No, that's a long answer, too.
What's your gut again?
What's good for that is what's good for everything else that's inflammation-based. You want an anti-inflammatory diet. I'll give you your top drivers of inflammation in the diet are grains, sugars, and man-made bad fats. So that's your canola oil, soy oil, margarine. So you cut out your grains, corn, wheat, and rice. Don't eat them for 30 days. Cut out your sugar. Anything that ends in OSE, that's code word for sugar. There's 30 different names for sugar. But look on the package ingredients for OSE. It's in everything. It's in ketchup. It's in the mayonnaise. It's in the bread. It's in the potato chips. It's in everything. So cut out your corn, wheat, and rice. Cut out the OSE, all the sugars. And then your oils or your fats, you want them healthy fats. Real butter, coconut oil, not canola oil, mm-hmm. Avocado oil, olive oil. Do that for 30 days. What you're going to do there is drop inflammation. You're going to encourage good gut bacteria to overgrow. For folks that don't get better, we got to go harder on the gut. 80% of your immune system's in your gut. This is an autoimmune disease, so it's not really a skin disease. It's an autoimmune. It's an immune system problem. It's manifesting on your skin, but it's really your immune system's dysfunctional. So we got to look at your immune system. 80% of it's in your gut. So let's heal your gut through your food, but also probiotics. There's fermented foods that are better than probiotics. There's Restore by Dr. Zach Bush. Those things will really encourage good gut bacteria to grow, and that can help your immune system. Then there's, you know, step three and step four beyond that, but you could start there. Now, if you go to the doctor, he's going to give you a topical cream, steroid cream. Steroids are anti-inflammatory because that doctor knows psoriasis is inflammation of your skin, so he's going to block the inflammation with a chemical, man-made chemical called a steroid. And that's okay for temporary, but it's not the cure. It's a Band-Aid. You want to try to fix it. You got to work on your immune system. That means your gut. So kind of a very quick answer, but go watch my video on my website on the gut health and my intro to functional medicine, part one and two, and you'll have a deeper understanding of all this.
Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, we appreciate it, sir. Have a wonderful day. We look forward to seeing you back here next time on You're the Cure. Again, you can check out archived shows and other information there at veritasmedical.com. Have a great week. I'll see you back here next week. Melody Wilkes, health coach, and, of course,
and Micah
Jackson, a physician's assistant there at Veritas Medical. Y'all have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stick around, Unconfused, coming next.